Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, January 9th. Hi, Tori.
I'm back, baby.
I bet you guys didn't know Tori was here, did you?
What?
Back from an extended vacation, folks, but we are here to entertain, to provide information, and to move you a little bit if we can.
Yes. We're circus monkeys. That's what we are. We're glorified circus monkeys.
We're playing around here. That's what we do with bananas and everything. Yes. We're monkeys.
Yes.
So, Tori, welcome back.
Thank you.
You were gone for a while. Did you get any politics out of your system with the family around?
We sure did. D.C. is a crazy place now. Everywhere we went, where you go in L.A. and you go and you sit at a coffee place and you hear, like, my agent said this or my casting director said this, and you always hear, that's what you hear.
Right.
In the background here is, like, Trump's Twitter, blah, 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 Trump. I can't believe we live in this Trump.
Wow.
So and they're all really preppy and they're disgusted and it's funny. It's just the same thing.
And they have to live with it every day.
My parents are, like, they live right near Mike Pence where he's living, and they're like, oh, my God. And Ivanka Trump just bought a house, $5.5 million, two blocks from the Obamas.
Really?
In D.C.
Wow.
So they're going to be at the local Whole Foods, and it's going to get awkward.
Right? Meet at the corner bar together.
So uncomfortable. Wow. So although Chelsea and Ivanka are very close friends, so it's very weird.
Really?
Yeah, so there's all this weird incestuousness. But Ivanka
when
just
did they meet? Do you know?
They've always been close since they were high school friends. They've grown up, like, Chelsea grew up with the Clintons, she grew up with the Trumps. They have a mutual background.
Right.
They've seen each other at charity functions and other things, and they've always been close. So at the debates, the families wouldn't talk, and then you'd see them hugging. And it was always
I know.
At least there's somebody.
I know. There you go. You see, I guess
the bridge.
That was long ago before they realized Trump was going to be a president.
Yeah. I don't know if she'd hug him now. Very sad.
Wow. But, the picture of the country is just very uncertain.
Very
right
changing.
Now,
yes,
right?
Meryl Streep was at the Golden Globes, gave her Cecil B. DeMille Award, and gave a speech against Trump.
Yes.
Big news. And, of course, Trump tweeted, calling her the most overrated actress. Which I don't think she is, it turns out. She's fantastic.
She deserved what she got. But I do have one thing about actors that make
political
statements. At the awards. But this is, to me, it's the same like the guy that didn't stand up for the national anthem. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you're taking advantage of your position to do something that's not related to what you're getting.
Well, the good thing is she related it back to the Hollywood Foreign Press and about the freedom of the press.
Right.
So she was basically saying, we really have to stick together because he's what we don't. We're Hollywood, we're foreign, we're press. He doesn't like anything about us. So it did relate back, but I do know what you're saying. It's sanctimonious to a lot of people, but it was a nice speech. And
in Hollywood, it's acceptable. They'll take it.
They'll take it.
But at any rate, I mean, I do appreciate her as an actress. Right. I don't know, excuse me, but to me, actors are not really people that I listen to for advice about life or politics or anything. I mean, they're famous, okay, but they're famous for acting.
Yeah, like, let's
you know,
be sure
for being
to
somebody
that.
Else.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I think, like, Meryl Streep, she went to Yale. She's definitely part of the political elite in D.C. for Democrats. I do like her background.
And she is political?
Yeah.
Really?
And she also hosts a lot of fundraisers. But the thing I liked about it was she was saying, just show empathy. And as actors, that's what we do. So she tried to tie it back. And it was a good speech for us.
Yeah.
We loved it.
Well, apparently people loved it. Yeah. So there you go. You know,
Trump tweeted, so it was great.
Lord. I know. I wish he'd stay away from Twitter, this guy.
I think a lot of people would wish he'd stay away from Twitter.
I mean, he's going to bury himself with those tweets.
That's what we all said, but they just keep getting, worse and worse. Yeah, no.
What is it with him and Twitter?
He thinks it's like his conduit to the people. And in some respects, hey, he won.
Yeah.
Maybe he's right.
I don't know, man.
No, I'm just kidding.
What does tick me off, though, is that there was a terror act in Jerusalem yesterday, and nobody's even talking about it. The same thing happened in France. The whole world was up in arms.
I know, this was...
You know, I don't know if you saw the video of this, but a big truck plowed into a group of soldiers.
It, right?
And what's that?
They rammed into them.
Yeah, into the soldiers. They killed four 20-year-old female soldiers and injured about 15 to 20 people. It was a terrorist. He got killed, of course. But where's the outrage,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. You know, following the UN resolution and all that stuff, it just shows you again, and I keep saying this, and I challenge somebody to challenge me on this. And that is, I think anti-Semitism is in the DNA of humanity. People don't like Jews. They don't even know why. They've hated Jews for thousands of years, and it hasn't abated at all.
It's so weird because we're so old school.
And we don't, you know, the thing is also, think about Jews. They're not like, they don't look for empires. They don't attack people. They don't torture people. They don't kill people. They just try to survive. And
in
they
this
have
tiny, tiny little space.
Yeah, yeah. And but even that, before that, there was no land, no country, no military, no government, no nothing. You know what I'm saying? How can we possibly be a threat to the world?
Yeah. Well, you guys have a fantastic security system, and you guys have an amazing military, but they had to. It's survival.
Yeah.
I think the outrage,
but it's not just you guys, it's we, because
you're a Jew too,
I'm talking about anti-Semitism. I'm not just talking about anti-Israel, you know, and it seems to happen everywhere, and I just, nobody can explain it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can explain. There's been hatreds in the world, like, look, with the Germans, with the Japanese, things like this. Now we're best friends, right? But with the Jews, it's never going to change, because I think it's built in. If you believe in God, I think he built it in, you know?
That's terrible.
Yeah. Just so we'll have a challenge, you know what
Maybe.
I'm saying?
I mean, it's the a really chosen, big challenge.
I call it we were chosen to suffer. That's what we were chosen for. For crying out loud, the Jews know how to mourn better than anybody
else. It's true. You're very Woody Allen right now. I'm loving this right now. They are the chosen ones for suffering. That's very true.
Yeah.
But also, like, there's so many terrorist attacks that it seems that things just get like you told me there's a bomb scare at this school. I'm like, oh, another one.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what happens. You get used to it.
Exactly.
It's very sad.
And it's terrible.
Yeah.
And when people have to live like this all the time and...
traumatic.
You know, yeah, the whole world is against you, you know, and you don't understand why. There's no clear explanation.
There's no answer.
No answer, you know? I mean, go figure. I mean, look, the Hebrews were enslaved in Egypt.
Yeah, we never were free.
Thousands of years ago. I'm telling you.
We were never
always
free.
Always attacked.
But always come back.
And everybody wants that piece of land there, you know, that's like, I mean, Jerusalem, you know, what is it about Jerusalem that everybody wants it, right?
It's like, you know, like Kanye. Everybody wants a piece of Kanye. It's like, it became like this moment, that piece of land that every single person wants. And it's not large and it's not important. But it's that thing, you know?
Right, yeah. True. Let's take a phone call real quick. By the way, we're going to have a guest calling in a few minutes. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. This is Aaron Fogel calling.
Oh, it is Aaron Fogel. Okay. I thought it was a caller because we expected you in a few minutes, but called in. And, no, we're happy, Aaron. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. I'm sorry. I thought I was being expeditious by calling in a couple minutes early. Yeah.
No, that's fine.
We, something else.
We appreciate that. But you did call right into the show, so we don't really screen anybody. We don't make you wait. You know, we respect our guests here. So we let them directly into the studio.
I could pretend to be like a prank call.
Yeah, exactly. That would be cool. That would be cool. We tend to humor those, but we don't take a lot of calls here. Aaron, thank you for calling in. Where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm calling you from the coldest region in the world, New York City.
Oh, wow. Is that your home there?
This is my home base, yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you just started a movie that takes place in New York. And
a lot
of movies are either in New York or in L.A. Tori, what do you think? Do you think they make more movies that take place in L.A. or New York?
What do you think, Aaron? I want to hear
Aaron,
what you say.
Yeah, what do you think?
I probably think they go to Canada.
Yeah, I was going to say it's Toronto.
But I meant between the two, you know?
Because
there's so many movies in New York that take place in New York. Sometimes I think L.A. is second.
But we get the most space because we have more land.
Right,
so
and we have Hollywood
bigger.
Here.
We have those studios. So.
Yeah. So, Aaron, tell us a little bit. Have you lived in Hollywood at all, being an actress and everything?
You know what's funny is that New York has always been my home base. It's where my family lives. I have another business that I own here in New York, which is a yoga studio.
I read about that.
Called House of Jai. So I feel like my roots are here, and I like sort of being a visitor in L.A. It makes me seem a little more exotic.
Yeah.
Yeah,
special.
I guess.
And people really want to meet you on a schedule when they know you're only in for a few weeks or a couple of months at a time, versus if you live there all the time, everyone goes, well, maybe we'll see you next week.
Yeah, you never meet up. You never meet up, ever.
But this is cool, you know. So so you're a New Yorker, you know, all together there. And your film takes place in New York, too. Now,
that's right.
So now you star in the film, but I also noticed you executive produced it as well, right?
I did, just to add insult to injury.
Yeah, there you go.
on both sides of the line, yeah. It was amazing, though.
That sounds good. Now, we'll talk about that. The movie's called The Strike. And the tagline is just because they have a plan doesn't mean they've got a clue.
And they don't.
So it sounds like a comedy, right? By the poster as well. Tell us a little bit about the film, Erin.
Well, it's definitely an out and out comedy. It's a bit of a comedy of errors, but it's still a morality film. It has a really great message at the end of it about how you have to be yourself in order to really grow and evolve to be the person that you've maybe been pretending to be all along. Mm. And so you have these three best friends who are, in essence, each other's worst enemy because they get in each other's way all the time from being successful.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
That's true.
It's sort of an opportunity of a lifetime falls into their lap that they say to themselves, guys, we have to get it together. We have to hone in all of our crafts and skill. We cannot mess this up. And of course, everything goes horribly wrong because we don't just change overnight. But it's in the layering of the movie that we're able to strip away each character's layers so that they can figure out what it is they really want and who they really are. And to thine own self be true, as Shakespeare would say. And we laid in it with a very diverse cast and colorful characters. And I tried to show quite a landscape of New York City so that anyone who's who either lives here or doesn't live here can have a little bit of a staycation from their home to see places they haven't seen before.
That's awesome.
There you go. So now let me ask you this. Now, when I understand what a producer does, you know, they pretty much put the movie together. But what's the role of an executive producer?
Well, in essence, it's, you know, and for years leading up to this movie, you know, I've lived in New York a long time. I have different networks. I work in different industries. TV and film is my number one passion. But when you've lived here long enough and you have enough contacts, people will call you and say, hey, Erin, you know your friend who owns that restaurant? Is there a way I could get in there to film my movie? Can you call them for me? Or, oh, Erin, you knew that great costume designer. Mm-hmm. Is there any way you could pair us together? And in the end, I realized I was really associate producing my entire life, networking people together.
Right.
So I decided to take the reins and sort of lead the team into finding that network of people and putting the right people together in order to make something that I really believed in.
Right.
And it was just the culmination of every part of my life at once, including the yoga studio, which is one of my primary locations in the movie.
Yeah, I saw people doing yoga positions. That's so funny that you incorporated. So did you write it, or were you part of the writing, or did you see the script and say, I love it?
Luckily, I didn't write it. So still had the chance to be good. Yeah. but a lot of the movie is improvised. So Guillermo Ivan, who's very well known in Latin America and now has started to make his emergence into the USA, wrote this film. Spanish is primarily his first language, so he sort of set the entire backbone of the scenes and where they needed to go, but we were really able to make it our own and come up with sort of our own little quirks and things that carried through, and we could say things in our own way and in our own timing. So it's a little bit of a hybrid between an improvised comedy and a scripted comedy.
Those are the best kind, man. Those are the best kind.
Oh, I know, because the happy accidents.
Yeah,
you know,
as an improviser, you got to, I'm an improviser, too, and I'm like, you got to let me go there because I have a great button. Let me do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And I think it really helps to evolve the characters because if you're a little bit stuck in the walls of the writing. And again, there are some writers that are so good you want to be in those walls.
Right.
You want to rent in that building for life and never leave. But it sort of gives you a liberation to take the characters maybe a little bit further.
Yeah, that's
true. Take the joke a little bit longer.
Right. And then I see there's a touch of nepotism here. I see the producers have the same last name as you. Glenn and Jerry, tell us a little bit about them. Are they part of your family?
It's actually reverse nepotism, funnily enough. But my parents live on the Upper East Side as well. They live just 10 blocks from where I live. And my father had always wanted to be an actor from when he was very young, and he never got to pursue it. And when I decided, you know, I was a child when I had visions of doing this in my life, I said, Dad, everything I do, I'm going to put you in it.
And what seemed
like a fantasy back then
turned into reality,
became the reality. And when I started producing The Strike, they were every minute like, what's going on with The Strike? Like, do you need anything? Do you need anything? Because they're so supportive. And of course, you need everything. You need any help you can get. You need. So, you know, I sort of was using their apartment as one of our production office spaces because it was such a centralized location to some of our locations on the Upper East Side. If I needed extra craft service, my mom was running to Costco and filling up her car. And, you know, I gave them a great scene in the film as well. And it wasn't until after the movie was said and done that I called them producers, because I couldn't have done it without them.
That's they were
true.
Producers.
I mean, that's awesome.
They really were. And they produced me.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. You know, I mean, without them, there would be no Strike.
This is very true.
So there you go. Also, the director, Guillermo Ivan, is it? Do you want to tell us a little
Ivan.
Bit about
Ivan?
I figured I'd say it wrong.
Impossible.
Yeah, I know. Guillermo, it's got to be Ivan.
But he's got a big following. He's kind of coming into America's audience, right?
Exactly. He, you know, when I met him over 10 years ago, he had shown me a film that he had made in Mexico that, I mean, he knocked me off my chair. I mean, we were in our early 20s, and he was making a film that looked like, you know, a $30 million film with car chases and explosions and helicopters. And I knew that this was somebody that I wanted to stay close to.
Yeah, right. I know
really
some people
knew
like
what he was doing.
Yeah, you got to stay close to those people.
So as we grew up together and culminated a deep friendship, and I consider him part of my family as well, you know, we said, why don't we do something together? You know, Guillermo can take all of the skills and qualities that he has as being a director and a writer, and his ability to see the world in a way and through a scope that I could only dream of seeing, you know, through a lens.
Mm-hmm.
And then taking my ability to bring all of those things into action with him, that we could make something really cool and different in New York City, which is a dream for a lot of the crew members who were also not from New York City, but from all over the world, from Thailand to Mexico, you know, to from Cuba, from LA.
So that's a diverse, group.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, that must have been fun. How long did it take to film this, the actual filming?
We had a little bit of weather not cooperating. The winter went a little too long, as it continues to keep doing. So we ended up with about a 30-day shoot.
Okay, that's not bad. That's not terrible.
I think we ran about 5 days over.
Yeah,
yeah, but it is definitely a full feature film. Now,
90 minutes.
90 minutes. Wow, that's quite a challenge. Is this the first time you actually had such a big role in a film? I mean,
not my first time as an actress. I played supporting roles in lots of different films, from Hollywood films to independent films to international films, but this was the first time that I've ever carried a film, which I've always longed to do.
Sure.
And sort of have the showcase of my own life here, which, if you see the film, it's really the showcase of Molly's life as well. So it's close to method acting in that a lot of what was happening for that character for the first time was also happening for me for the first time. And a lot of the art imitated life, and then later on, the life imitated the art in very strange ways.
Weird. And Bronson Pinchot, how do you say his last name? Pinchot?
Pinchot, I think, right?
Pinchot.
Oh,
yeah.
God, he's in it. I have always loved him. Always
he's
from Perfect
talented,
Strangers.
Right?
Oh, yeah. What a cool.
I grew up with
yes,
him.
Yes, what a comedy.
Oh, you
genius.
Grew up with him, so he's a New Yorker too?
Oh, no, we didn't grow up, like, together socially, but I grew
up
watching
him.
Show,
watching him.
Perfect
okay.
Strangers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's true.
His physical comedy, unbelievable.
Well, that was a big thing, is that when we were casting that role, the character name is Carlo Lombardi. The submissions that we were getting and the auditions that we were taking were just not... They were really Carlo Lombardis, like very sort of Sopranos type
yeah.
that were coming in. Mm. And it made me realize that agencies don't always read the description of the character because we learned that Carlo Lombardi is actually a pseudonym that this character has put on for himself because he himself is also wearing a mask in the film. So then it became sort of the struggle of, okay, now we have to think on our own and have outreach to try to find the right person.
Right,
right.
And in the film, the character of Carlo Lombardi was once a very well-known actor.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Who now has not worked in
that's
a long
hilarious.
Time. And I said to myself, I got to find that. Yeah.
Yes. That's a perfect person for that. That's great.
Yeah, that's fun.
And he has such a depth of comedy that he can be both the wind-up and the pitch.
Yeah.
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 You know, he can be on either side of the joke.
Wow. See, now I'm really curious to see the film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what I like when you talk about the people, to the people that make the film.
Yeah.
And then they tease it like this.
You and you're
know,
like, what
now,
is it?
Now I really want to see what it's
I
like.
See, like
you know, I bet you
yeah.
it's really funny.
And there's some costumes and stuff. Is there some kind of robbery or is that something that like the main thing you guys are trying to get out
well,
of?
Well, wait a minute. I don't want her to give it away. Okay.
Oh, okay, fine. That's not the main part of it.
It is. I think, you know, when you don't know what it is.
All right,
that,
fine.
Right? That they
I
find.
Don't want to rob you.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
No. Yeah, I don't want to know. I want to find out.
Rob you. I like that air quote.
But the costume, separately from any sort of robbery, which there may or may not be, one of the characters, Richard, he's one of the three best friends. He is a very typical New Yorker, kind of a hipster, where he, as his living, or lack of living, I should say, ends up being the mascot for either a different restaurant or a different street sign holder. So like one day he's a chicken, one day he's a mariachi pig, one day he's a whale. Yeah,
that's
so
hilarious.
We have cornered the market on costumes, that's for sure.
That's another mask that he had to put on, huh?
Wow.
Literal
mask.
Put on
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, Aaron Fogel, the film is The Strike. Tell us where we can see it. This is out already, right?
It is out already. We are on DirecTV. We are on Verizon Fios on the recently added new releases. We're on Amazon, iTunes, YouTube, Vudu.
That's
we got
awesome.
More
so,
PlayStation.
Wow.
So you don't need movie theaters anymore to distribute movies, huh?
You know, it turns out, I mean, and it's a little bit sad, but even when I think of the last time that I went to the movies.
Oh, my God. 20 years ago.
That's true.
I mean, I love that popcorn, though, man. Like,
me too.
You can't
that
get
butter.
That.
I don't know what that butter is.
Yeah. But I can recommend very good popcorn if you want.
Oh.
Orville Redenbacher.
Yeah.
The butter one. Okay.
Yeah, the butter one.
Not extra butter.
I see.
Not movie theater butter. Just the yellow label.
The normal.
That's the best popcorn. It's even better than the theater.
See,
I promise
I'm
you. If you like, and it's not too much butter, you know.
I like a kettle corn. I'm going to go kettle corn
yeah.
all the time. I'm always
like
going to go there.
Corn.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm never going to give up
you know,
on kettle corn.
If you want to show that we're foodies, you could add a little truffle butter.
Oh, get me some truffle. Oh, yeah. Get me some truffle in there.
Right.
Ooh.
Wow. So this is cool, Aaron. So you're able to distribute this everywhere. And I think that's another part of our new digital age where you can reach so many more people and also give more opportunity to more talent, you know? Because if there
of
were
course.
Not, if those channels of distribution did not exist,
those jobs wouldn't
nobody
exist.
Would see your film, you know, because there's so many films out there.
You know, it's interesting. The Golden Globes was last night and all the major studios were shut out. HBO had
really?
14 nominations
wow.
and left empty handed, but it was Amazon mm-hmm. and it was those people that just hit it out of the park.
Wow.
So you
the
see
originals,
the trend. The originals.
Right?
Yeah, you see it. You see it
happening. I think because you have all of these new teams
yeah.
that are coming in to create the platform and they're kind of throwing the old rules out. It's a little bit of the Wild West, which, as we know, is the most fun place to live in.
Absolutely.
And they're not feeling confined by a certain formula.
Exactly.
These are shows that places like HBO maybe had passed on, or even primetime had passed on.
Right.
And then it gave way to shows like Breaking Bad that were on different cable networks. And people were like, wow, you know,
AMC,
if you kind of step over the line,
you
can get a lot more done.
Yeah, AMC, FX, those studios became what HBO used to be, sort of the groundbreaking ones. And they, you saw it at the Golden Globes. They kept winning.
Yeah.
Lionsgate, stuff like that.
And they create series that actually is a lot of content. It keeps a lot of people busy. And we didn't have that before.
No, binging was not a thing. Now I can't stop binging.
Yeah,
binging was not a thing. Oh, I mean, in the kitchen.
Yeah, the food.
Sure.
Yeah, the food. Let's talk about binging. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's when nobody was looking, but now we want to share our binging with
everybody. We do. But now I binge food and while I binge the TV, so it's not good for anybody.
At yeah, you do both,
time,
right?
It's double fisting.
Well, you can come over and do yoga. Come
Heck
to the yoga studio.
There
we
you go.
How long, it all out.
Erin, how long have you been into yoga and everything?
Well, I've been doing yoga from when I first started acting, and I saw myself on camera. I noticed that my posture was really, I'll be honest, it was horrendous. You know, one shoulder was higher than the other, one hip, the opposite hip was higher than the other.
Wow.
And my face really sort of filmed a little bit heavy, especially on the bottom. And if they shot you from below, it's really not
the worst. The worst.
Go on.
So I started going to yoga really just to, you know, feel more comfortable on camera and hope, you know, I hope to widen my scope of the roles that I might be, you know, submitted for and thought of for. But it took on such a deeper meaning for me. And as I was able to understand how the body functions and connect my mind to my body, I found that the things that I was dreaming of, I was able to manifest and they were coming to me. So I wanted to share this with everybody, and I was doing yoga for, I'd say, 8 years or so before I opened up a studio here on the Upper East Side, and, you know, I try to bring a sense of love and community to everybody here in a way that you don't see a lot with a lot of the corporate yoga studios that are funded by gyms, you know, where they don't know your name and they nickel and dime you for mats and towels, you know. You come to House of Jai and, you know, Jai means victory. And that's exactly what we're built on, is the feeling of love and victory and achieving everything that anyone told you that you weren't going to be able to.
Right.
We tell you that you can.
Wow. Right. That's, what do you call it, Jai?
Sounds Jai. Like, yeah, J-A-I.
Oh, J-A-I. What language is that in? Is that like a spiritual thing?
That would be
something?
In Sanskrit.
Sanskrit.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Jai.
House of Jai.
It's like Yiddish. You know, they don't speak it anymore.
Yeah, right.
We still slang it sometimes.
Erin Fogel, the movie is The Strike. How can people find you? How can they contact you? Obviously, they can just join the yoga club and or the yoga studio and actually get to work out with you, which is awesome.
That would be great. Yeah, I teach during the week, and I'm also the managing director, a.k.a. the mayor. So if you want a hug and a smooch, I'll be there for you.
How cool.
You can find me on erinfogel.com, and you can also find The Strike, www.thestrikemovie.com.
Yes, and you can see a trailer there and get more information on the movie and everything. I'm eager to see it.
Me too.
And I'll probably watch it on, what do I watch? Amazon. So I'll find it on Amazon. Check it out, everybody.
Great.
Sounds great. Sounds funny. Great actors. Great people behind the scenes.
I still think we need more comedy, so I'm so happy to have a comedy in the library of all the drama that's happening, both in cinema and in the world.
Here.
There you go. Erin, and next time you're in L.A., please come and visit us here in the studio. We'd love to have you.
I would love to be there, and I might be 7 minutes early then too, just so you know.
Wow, that would be awesome, because most people are 7 minutes
too late always. We'll do some yoga together.
I know.
All right,
it's so much longer in my mind than in reality.
I know.
Erin, thank you so much.
I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You're a lot of fun, and you definitely teased the movie enough for me to be curious enough to see it. So I'm going to check it out, and then we'll discuss it.
Oh, yes.
So that'll be cool.
Namaste, my love.
Yes.
Namaste.
There you go. Erin, what's next for you? What are you working on next as far as film and stuff?
Oh, thanks for asking. I'm actually working on two new projects. They're really deep into development at this point. One would be my next film, and it's called Where's Willow? And this is a darker comedy, and it's sort of the trials and tribulations of a 34-year-old narcoleptic.
Oh, God.
Who has, who has found herself sort of lost in her own world because she's been sleeping through most of the important and poignant moments of her life.
Wow.
But now she's in a position where she needs to be awake and face all of these things for the first time again. So sort of like The Strike, it's got that idea of second chances.
Yeah, and your real self, your real identity.
Say that again?
Your real identity, having to come to grips with who you really are.
Oh, exactly. I thought you meant me. I'm like,
no.
I'm awake right now.
So I'm awake.
That's a good start.
You sound awake
and
to
then,
me.
I sound a little awake. It was that cappuccino this morning, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
And then I'm also working on a television series, which would be for, hopefully, for a cutting-edge platform like Amazon. We're going to be approaching them soon. This is a little bit more... sort of addressing the political, social, class system, bringing together all the ethnicities from the world, although blah, blah, blah is a good title.
Yep, very good, very clear.
And making them coexist together and showing sort of what the cliches that we think of other cultures might be, and we're turning them on their head.
Sounds good to me. You guys know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, come back and promote that as well as soon as it's ready. And
I will.
Yeah, you're definitely a lot of fun, Aaron. You're a friend of the show now, so you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you so much.
Okay. All the best and much success with The Strike.
Thank you, love. Namaste again.
Namaste, guys.
Okay, House of Jai, if you're in New York, check it out. You get to meet Aaron in person and do yoga with her. Can't beat that.
Sounds like a dream.
Yes. Thank you, Aaron.
A triple threat. Thank you, guys.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, Aaron.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I did yoga for 10 years. Did
really?
You know that?
Really? No, I did not know
when
that.
I went to Northwestern for acting, they made you do intense yoga.
Are you serious?
And I remember thinking, why the hell am I getting in shape for being an actor? I don't want to exercise. And they have the idea that mind and body is very similar to what you do when you're acting. Mm. So your body is the instrument, so it has to be in the best shape it is. Yes, I have stopped doing yoga and probably should get back into it. But as an actor back then, it was intense yoga. Wow. And it was like to make your body the best instrument you could be. It was also more theatrically based, so you really wanted your body to be in good shape.
Yeah.
But I remember that yoga and acting had so much in common. Always have. So very interesting.
Cool. Yeah. So yeah, so I guess actors should be doing yoga.
Yeah, it gets you into a nice focused way where you can be open to different, you know, playing different roles, but you have a nice basis of just a focus, a concentration.
Yeah. It's funny because I keep saying no to yoga, and yet I never really tried it.
Yeah,
I mean,
have you tried?
I did like one or two classes.
Okay.
But it was hard. First of all, it's hard, right? Because you have to really control your muscles.
Yeah.
So you should probably start getting in shape before you actually do some yoga, I think.
Well, yoga, if you want to do, you can do beginner's yoga, which is like vinyasa, and it's just more flowing positions. And it's good for people who haven't done any exercise because it's just stretches.
Oh, okay.
So that
good.
Could be great.
Yeah.
But it is, for people that like you and me, we like to go, it can be a little hard because you stay in the position for like up
and
to,
you want
to
move
like, the hell, like I'm stuck in Warrior II. So, but it makes you concentrate, and it
That's
focuses
true.
Your mind, and it really, it's very, very good for your spiritual health. Really,
it is, because I guess it teaches you how to slow down. You know, so
very much so.
Yeah,
and it makes you learn patience. So the next time in a line and it's taking forever, I sort of go yoga. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's always good for everybody. It's good for 90-year-olds and 2-year-olds. They teach yoga now with kids with developmental problems to try and get them to focus on their body more and learn body movement. So it's good for everybody.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
So going back to your, I want to go back to your trip because, I mean, in 3 weeks, you probably did a lot, right?
I really didn't. That was the best
really?
Part. I like just really chilled out. And
really?
Well,
where were you? I mean, just in D.C.?
I spent half of it with the in-laws and half with my parents.
Oh.
So half was in Cape Cod. And I just fucking love that place.
Really?
I really do.
Is it nice? It's so different from here.
It's so different, and it's like a postcard. Cape Cod and Chatham, where I was specifically, it was snowing, but it was like it was founded in 1600s, and you see things that are 200 years older than the country, you know, like that it was founded on. Yeah. And the people there are so polite, and they are very open and expressive and warm. And it's just the opposite. I saw such a difference between, I love Los Angeles, but between LA and Cape Cod, I felt like I was home in a weird way. It feels very.
Well, it's back east for
it
you.
It is.
You
it really is. East, and the rhythm and the pacing is there.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit slow. Like I went to get my nails done, and this girl and I just, instead of rushing in, and everyone's like, you don't really make eye contact because it could be somebody, you know what I mean? Gwen Stefani could be my left. I spoke to Lola. I got to know her mom, her dad. We ended up exchanging phone number. That's what happens when it's more of a hometown type of place.
That's
and
true.
It's just a really wonderful experience. So I'm really happy for my in-laws. They moved from Phoenix because it wasn't their type of town.
Right.
And this is a more...
What a different place from Phoenix.
So
huh?
different.
Wow.
Yeah, so different. So it's a lovely place. And they, you know, they have like the baseball team where the kids from the high school are making the burgers, and you know, it's just ridiculous. It's just lovely. It's just lovely.
It is. It's like a homey kind of place.
Very homey. And yeah. So
you see, people have to understand that LA is not the United States.
Right.
New York is not the United States.
Exactly.
You know, we have so many different kind of places.
Exactly. And you know, it reminded me a bit of Michigan. I went to University of Michigan, and it has a Midwest feeling of like anyone's welcome. It's much more inviting. And when we came back here and my husband and I were going to get breakfast, people just won't look at you. It's just
That's
so
true, right?
different.
Isn't that different?
And everyone's just talking about themselves or someone else and sort of shit talking. And it doesn't happen that way.
Right.
It's just the industry is just not there. So you get this real sense of community. I think LA has that, but it's such, when you're in the industry, it's a cutthroat feeling, to be honest.
Right.
So it's a different vibe. And I got to relax, and it would be raining, and I'd read, and we'd take walks and go to the beach with the dogs. And it was just lovely, really. It's like a postcard.
Yeah.
So it was great. And then DC was different,
different,
you know?
Right?
Yeah.
A lot of action.
Yeah, DC's
DC.
A lot more like Hollywood, where the politics are what you talk about. And it's just like Hollywood talks about the industry. And everyone's sort of looking around to see if you're somebody. So that reminded me more of LA. So, and that way it's more PC and different, but it's still home.
Yeah.
So it was really nice. And, you know.
Did it snow at all?
It snowed for a little bit, but it was ass bitingly cold in both places. And I was not used to it. So, but it was lovely. It's funny to see the Obamas transition away from DC, that town, to a new Trump town.
Right.
It's just funny to hear people flipping
right.
out.
Yeah. Right.
So, but yeah, but it's still, we went to museums and we went to some theater, and so it was lovely. It was really,
yeah,
really lovely.
So you did do things.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You're right.
Did you, do you ever go and see friends or anything you grew up with?
I try to.
Are you in touch with anybody?
That's something I want to do better. I'm not good at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really stink at it.
And today it's easier with Facebook.
I know, but it's somewhat harder
because
I know what they're doing, but I don't connect with them in person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a confusing thing.
But you know what, Alex? Explain that to you, because I have that too when I connect with people from childhood,
yeah.
right? But the thing is that you were a child then.
I know,
you
we changed.
Exactly.
I know.
You were attracted to each other because of the circumstances
That's
at
right.
the time. You
That's
know?
Right.
Maybe you lived in the same neighborhood or your parents were friends or whatever, but now you have nothing in common.
No, and my mom is very Jewish and very guilt-ridden about, why don't you see your friends? How come you don't see? And so I feel terrible, but at the same time, I don't have a lot in common
right, exactly.
with these people. I don't. And so...
Yeah.
I try and stay in contact, but it's mostly college friends that I'm closest with.
Right, because those
you know
are
what I mean?
Friends that persisted, right?
Yeah,
they
exactly,
stay.
Yeah. So those are the closest, but I do feel... It sucks that we have these big champagne and lobster New Year's Eve party every year at my parents' house. And so we get black tie and it's very fancy.
How cool.
But I wanted to invite friends and I was like, I don't know
who
to invite.
I got
nobody.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I just drank more champagne and had more lobster.
Yeah, there you go. Who cares?
It was great.
You know?
Yeah, so it was nice. And we all got decorations and we had a Hanukkah party. And so it was nice. It was really nice.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah.
So you get all the holidays and everything.
Yeah, they kind of like conflated it into one thing. So it was just a lot of drinking.
Why not? People celebrating together. What
the
hell?
Best.
You know?
It's the best.
I mean, even if you're like, you know, let's say you're Jewish and you're opposed to celebrating Christmas or something because it just doesn't seem right, right?
Right.
But if you celebrate next to somebody who's celebrating Christmas, you celebrate Hanukkah, they'll celebrate Christmas. Everybody's
it's
happy.
A party. It's
you
a
know?
Party.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the thing is that people don't realize how close Jews and Christians really are.
Yes, the OG and the new G, exactly.
Yeah, you know.
And then we tuned in to watch the New Year's Eve, of course, on TV, and we saw the wonderful Mariah Carey.
Oh, you did see
mishap,
that?
And I was like, what is happening right now?
Wow, this was like in real time.
God, huh? It was so sad. And it was just humiliating for her. Yeah. And
so what was the story? It was lip syncing and she wasn't in sync?
Well, and you know, everyone has to lip sync when it comes to like doing a huge Times Square.
Yeah, because sometimes they dance too, right? And you can't sing and dance
and
the
you know,
time.
You know, like Adele, she doesn't lip sync. And you know, Lady Gaga doesn't lip sync. So good for them. But most of the time when you have you can't hear yourself.
Right.
So you really have to use an ear monitor and they practice with a dubbing track and you then sing over it.
Right.
She apparently did not want to go to rehearsal, which makes perfect sense. She's Mariah Carey. She had a stunt double do it. So she wasn't there to practice. Yeah. And when the music started, she was on a very different song.
Well, you know what? She deserves it. If she didn't go to
did
the rehearsal.
She did not go. Come on. You got to put the. That's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
As an actor and an artist, you got to put the work in to make sure that your stuff is done right. Because she looked like a real.
She looked like an idiot. No, for a friggin'
that's what
rehearsal?
I'm saying. And she's very known as the diva, and I get it, but when it's your artistry shown to millions of people, you gotta show up.
Right.
So instead of sort of playing it off and singing, she just said, "Well, I'm letting the audience sing," and walked off. So it was very uncomfortable.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And so obviously she's paid a big price for
she
that.
She has, and
one.
She'll
never miss another rehearsal. I
hope she
I
doesn't.
You.
She blamed Dick Clark Productions for doing it on purpose to get ratings.
Yeah, right.
So that was that. And Dick Clark Productions was like, never, ever, ever have we done that. And it's just absurd
Why
to think
would
they would.
We? Yeah.
No, yeah, that's absurd.
I mean, it would look bad on them too, because it's not like they, it would seem like they didn't, I mean, it was on their watch.
Yeah, and they came back very harshly against Mariah, and they were like, in no way, shape, or form did you rehearse this. We asked you several times.
Wow.
We said your earpieces aren't working. Can you stop? And she said no. So they did everything they could. The woman is just a diva. Man. She's a diva.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
No, it was not a good-looking New Year. 2017 didn't start off so smooth for Mariah.
Yeah, I know. Wow.
So, yeah. It was not pleasant. But, and you know, they made a joke at it at the Golden Globes, but the Golden Globes is produced by Dick Clark Productions.
No, really?
So it was very uncomfortable. So it's interesting. So yeah.
How was Jimmy Fallon? Was he good?
He was not good.
No.
No.
Why?
Jimmy Fallon is like, he's like the kid that has too much energy in the beginning of the day, and you're like,
right?
Shut
and
up.
He's not that funny.
And he's just not, and he was like, oh my God, this is so great, it's so great. And what happened was to him, the monitor wasn't working when it started, so his monologue wouldn't go.
What?
And instead of being a effing professional and having some backup, he just said, oh my God, the monitor's not working, what do we do? And he said, cut to Justin Timberlake, and like no one laughed, and it was this big, it just was not a good performance. And he made some dumb jokes about like Chastain and Redmayne, like a Beastie Boys joke, and it was like, oh God. So I just miss Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. They were fantastic. They always have been. I just think Jimmy Fallon is just overrated, and he knows it too. He sort of made fun of his image, but it was not good.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was very good.
How's he doing on the Tonight Show? Or
yeah, I mean, he's been known after the Trump thing. Like, instead of asking some real questions, he just rubbed his hair. He got trashed.
Yeah.
And his reputation has really gone sort of downhill. And he's just known as someone who's just like so phony. He's so happy for every guest that it's like, I can't handle it. It's just
too
so
much?
Sycophantic and phony. And I like Jimmy Fallon. It's just he's too into it in himself.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't. I really Samantha Bee to me is much funnier.
Yeah.
So
you see, I was kind of like, I raised my eyebrow when they picked him.
Yeah, you know? I know. And there's so many other people like Kristen Wiig and Steve Carell presented and they did this hilarious bit on their first animated film that they had seen. And it turns out it was both these horrible days and they start crying on stage and it was like, let these guys do it. Or let, you know, Tina Fey and Amy, Jimmy Fallon was just laughing at himself. So it was kind of annoying.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I think usually it's probably better to have two presenters, right?
Yeah. And like, you know, another white guy, like, come on, you know, I just wish it had been somebody else, and he was just really lame in my opinion. For all those Fallon lovers, I'm sorry.
There you go, but you're being honest about
being
how
honest.
You,
and I think it wasn't well received, you know, so we'll see.
Yeah,
it was fast. I mean, they got through it fast.
Really?
The clips now, they don't show clips, they just go like, they go like la la lam bang, like right, and then
really?
They go, yeah, so they
good.
Speed it through. Yeah,
good. So we don't have to see like 30 minutes.
No. So and you know, Brad Pitt made a surprise appearance, and you know, he's my number one. So that was very exciting to see Brad.
Why was Why was it a surprise?
He wasn't. He didn't do red carpet, and he wasn't in the audience. Oh. So he came to present, and everyone's like, "Whoa!
Oh, I see,
Brad."
Okay.
And he looked. He looked like Legends of the Fall, Brad. Like really? Very good looking, Brad. He got a nice little round of applause, and Leo was looking great.
Yeah.
But the big moment was Emma Stone went to go hug Damien Chazelle, who's the director of La La Land, and she like missed him, and then had this awkward moment and said like, "Oh my God, I'm so weird. I'm so sorry." It was a funny little moment.
Really?
So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Embarrassing, maybe.
Yeah, but in a good way. She totally pulled it off.
Really?
Nice. Yeah.
She's cute. Like her.
She's wonderful. Good.
Did you get to see La La Land yet?
Yeah, I love La La Land.
Really?
Yeah, I love La La Land.
Yeah, you looked forward to it, so yeah, that's good.
I really did, and it did well. I knew it would hit big at the Golden Globes. I didn't know The Night Manager would do so well, which is a British film. But it is the Hollywood Foreign Press, so they tend to like more foreign films. But Moonlight got Best Picture, which I think will be getting a lot of Oscar noms too. Mm. So La La Land and Moonlight really hit. You know, that was the big winners of the night, and People versus OJ did very, very well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But that would be an Emmy, not an Oscar, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it was a mini TV show. Yeah, they did miniseries. So it was fun. It was just, and it was a lot of diversity. But the big moment was Meryl Streep going after Trump, and people were like, "Damn, queen."
Hey, talking about TV, I did want to bring up that I started watching Westworld after you recommended it, right?
And how do you like
it? Well, first of all, not enough nudity in the first three. Okay? And not only that, but I got to tell you, after the third episode, I felt nothing new is happening here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got the concept. Yeah, yeah. You know,
it gets muddy in the third and fourth. It gets a little muddy because you've seen the same things.
Yeah.
The ending, the finale was excellent.
Really?
Yeah, it does stuff
But I
happen.
Have to watch like 13 episodes to get there.
Yeah.
You know, let me ask you. I mean, does it get more exciting?
Yes.
It does.
But it's,
so you I have, should go back to it?
But if you're not invested into those characters and what's happening, it's not going to get that much better.
That's
for
true,
you.
Right? Yeah. And the characters still are not there. You only have the girl.
Evan Rachel Wood, yeah.
Right. And she's the only one you've really connected, at least in the first three, four episodes.
Yeah. I mean, Jeffrey Wright, you're trying to get into, but the Bernard.
Who's that?
Bernard.
Right. The guy that programs them and everything, the black guy.
Yeah, there's a big twist with him.
Wow.
So there is twists. It's just the third and fourth episode gets a little repetitive.
Okay, so
maybe skip through it.
Maybe I'll skip through it, but I don't want to because I don't want to miss out on anything.
And more nudity. You can't miss the nudity.
Exactly, you know. But then the other character also.
Tandy Newton.
Yeah, the black girl, the prostitute,
she was up for an award too.
So it was like sort of repetitive with her also and stuff. And
the funny thing is they repeat their stories every single day.
Right.
So it inherently is repetitive.
Right.
It's when that sort of breaks that it becomes interesting.
Okay.
So you kind of have to chug through.
So maybe that's what it is. I that they live is. The same day every day.
They do
day.
Loops. They loop themselves of the same stories because they're robots. So, but it
you see, I didn't pick that out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I didn't pick up on it.
Like, she does the same. The prostitute drinks the same sherry every day, asks the same questions every day.
Right.
But then they start to get sort of a sense of themselves and they're like, wait, what am I doing here? And then it becomes very interesting.
Okay. So they're starting to get certain conscience, right?
Correct. And the reverie starts to get,
so I need to get to that. Okay.
And there's more nudity. Tandy Newton is just full on nude for a lot of it. And she's the most gorgeous individual on earth.
Wow.
She's stunning.
Wow.
And she was up for an award, as was Evan Rachel Wood.
Yeah.
So
I noticed, I mean, I guess that's where I am, like in the third episode where things are starting to happen over and over.
Yes.
So I guess I started suspecting something, but haven't gotten to the point where it's clear yet.
Sure.
You know, so you see her going back and forth with her dad outside.
The same day.
Porch.
How's the morning? Good morning. Same words, same things.
Right.
But then
it's like a Groundhog Day.
Exactly.
Right?
It's like the Truman Show. Really, they do the same loops over and over. But when the loops break is when it starts to get interesting. So you kind of have to slog through a bit. But it does. The finale I thought was great. I like the ending a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you got me wanting to watch
good.
It now.
Good.
Because at least I can tell you the first two episodes were amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm like, it had that lost kind of feeling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you don't know what you're in for, you know?
Yeah.
So I got what you're saying about Lost.
Yeah.
And it's
J.J. Abrams is part of it, you know? But Anthony Hopkins, I could not understand
a lot
of what he was saying, right?
Yeah.
That guy just
That's
mumbles,
true.
But he's good in the finale. He's great.
Right. And then what's the name of the star, the really handsome guy?
James Marsden? Yeah.
Okay.
Is that the...
He looks like a movie star.
God dang,
right?
Does he look like a movie star.
Right.
My parents happened to be randomly in the Belgium embassy with the they're friends with the ambassador to Belgium, and James Marsden was there.
Really?
And my mom was like, oh my God. And he turned out to be a lovely individual. So
really?
He's also a very nice guy. But yeah, he's a hottie, and he's a hottie patootie. He really is. He's cute.
He does look like a movie star.
He sure does. But it becomes funny because him playing the movie star becomes part of it in the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they play on that. So it's interesting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. Yeah, it gets real dark and gets really interesting.
It's pretty cool because they mix like Wild West with like modern tech.
Very,
you know, like,
yes.
Like Terminator type.
And in closer to the end, you see more of them expanding the theme park. Mm-hmm. And you get to see like the people like literally having to build more of the theme park. And I like that stuff where you see the inside part of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the inside
yeah,
and outside.
Yeah, that part's very cool. So it gets better. It does get better.
I know, when they like watch it in miniature and they see the whole the whole park
crazy.
And stuff, right?
It's crazy. And then I watched the OA. Have you heard of the
no,
OA?
No, I've heard of it.
Okay, everyone's been talking about it. And yeah. What's funny is I loved every single episode except the ending was a big...
Really?
Oh my God.
And do they tell you what the OA stands for?
Yes, but I got to tell you, it is really out there, okay?
Really?
If you like Stranger Things, where it's another world type of thing, you will like the OA.
Really?
However, the ending, to me, does not pay off.
Really?
The big finale that happened was like...
Is it kind of X-Files type of thing?
Very X-Files, really? Very... And the lead is named Britt Marling, and she actually wrote it, and she created it, and she directed it, and she stars in it. She's wonderful. She plays the OA. And you're totally involved. You're like, what the hell am I watching? It's almost like a Twilight Zone. And you're like, what is happening? And then the end has this big moment, and you're like, oh, no.
And but how many episodes was
there's
that?
There's 8 episodes.
8 episodes, and you watched all of them.
I did, and I binged it hard, and I thought the ending would work. I didn't love the ending, but I loved all the other episodes. So if you just want to see something like Stranger Things and you're in the mood to binge, it's really, really good.
It puzzles me because you're really a restless person and yet you can binge for hours with this stuff. I don't know how you can. I can't watch more than 20 minutes of anything.
Yeah, I can binge hardcore. That's something that's happened to
me. That's cool, though.
Because it's weird.
Attention. You can get into the whole story in one sitting.
Yeah, like my attention span is also very short and also can be very long, but nothing in between. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you're lucky that
way. Yeah.
Okay, folks, we're totally out of time. We want to thank Aaron Fogel for calling in. Everybody go and get The Strike. Watch it online.
Looks so good.
Sounds great. And Tori, thank you.
Anytime.
Great to have you back, of course.
Anytime.
Thanks for talking
to
you
back.
All again. We love being here. And thanks for joining us as always. And we'll see you
tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.